Thank you. Thank you. Let me correct one statement that she made. I don't own anything. I control some things, but I don't own anything in my name. Thank you for inviting me. I'm from Champaign, Illinois, and this is my second or third time at this event, and I love this event. It's wonderful. I do want to make an announcement, though. Evidently, a lady lost a phone. If any of you find a phone, take it to the front desk. There's one of you have lost your phone. I started buying houses in 1969 when I was in college. And I've been buying houses ever since. But I probably had about 15 houses in my name personally before I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, this is really stupid. All you got to do is go to the county records and you can find out what I own, what it's assessed for, and what my debt is. With those three numbers, you know my net worth and whether or not I'm good enough to sue. So I started researching ways to holding the title to this stuff without my name associated. And, of course, there are corporations and LLCs, and I do use LLCs. I encourage you to have an LLC, but not to hold the title. Because can't we look up who owns LLCs? At least in most states we can. So if you're holding title in an LLC in a state that publishes that information, you don't have any privacy. And one of the main things that you can do as real estate investors is not be on the title and to have privacy about your assets. Because the first thing a lawyer does when they consider suing you is they do something and you don't even know what happens. It's called an asset search. So they want to see if you are worthy of suing. Have you ever noticed that they don't sue poor people? Why is that? They got nothing to pay with. So land trusts aren't the be-all, end-all of asset protection, but they're the first step that we can do as real estate investors. We can do it ourselves. It costs nothing to form a land trust. So I teach you to put every property into a separate trust. I don't care if you have 5 properties or 105. Everyone goes in a separate trust. A separate trust. So you title one property in one trust. The other reason why I don't title into the land into the LLC is, let's just take an example. Let's say you you own 5 apartment buildings, and you title them all in one LLC, and there's a lawsuit on one. I had a friend who had 5 apartment buildings, and one of his tenants' children fell out the window.
Oh, goodness.
And wasn't killed, but was damaged considerably. And he was found accountable because there was no screen on the window. Now, do all of you drive around every day to your properties to make sure the screens are there? Probably not. But if you have all 5 of those apartment buildings in one LLC and they sue just one building, that doesn't relate to your other 4 properties. They sue and they win, they get a judgment. Maybe the insurance company either doesn't cover the claim for some reason or it's in excess of the limits of liability. They get a judgment against the owner. Who's the owner?
LLC.
Kind of sounds like they got a judgment against everything, right? They do. Because the judgment goes against the owner and everything the owner owns, which is all 5 of your buildings. So you see how dangerous this can be? I was just talking to a gentleman before I came over here in the what do they call it, room over there?
The bookstore.
The bookstore. He came up to my table and he was telling me he got sued for $5 million on an apartment building he bought through foreclosure. And the guy who got foreclosed on was mad about losing the building, so he put 2 tenants up to suing the new owner for $5 million. Well, he put it in a land trust, he said. And what the land trust did was it slowed down the process of the lawsuit because he'd already represented himself correctly as the property manager. When your property's in a trust, you don't own it. You can be the manager. You own the trust, but if anybody says you own this building, You got to be honest, and you say, no, I don't, because you don't. So the long story, the short version of his long story was it slowed everything down and allowed him to deal with the issue instead of just, you know, if the property's in your name, it's just cut your head off and you're done. You have no defense. They ended up settling for $2,500 for each tenant on a $5 million lawsuit. This is crazy. You know, the legal system is run amok in America. It's not about who's right and who's wrong, is it? It's who's got the smartest lawyer, who's got enough money to keep you in court so long that you run out of time, money, or inclination. And that's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to defraud anybody. We're not trying to sidestep our liabilities and our responsibilities. We're just saying, hey, don't come after me for something I didn't do just because you're trying to get an easy payday. So if we make it difficult, chances are they'll just go sue somebody who owns real estate in their name, right? So before I just go on and on and on, because I'm like a wind-up doll, let's have some questions. Do you have any questions about land trust? Yes, sir.
So when you put something in the land trust, let's say rent property, two questions. Number one, does that trust need to have its own bank account for that rental property?
No.
Okay, number two, who are the tenants making the check out to?
Great question. First off, land trusts are considered pass-through entities by the IRS, which means no tax ID number, no tax return. So everything flows through to the beneficiary. Now, most real estate investors make the beneficiary of the land trust an LLC to get that asset protection, but they're not on the title. They're just getting the asset protection of the LLC. So there's two ways you can handle this. If you manage your own property, which I do, I've got a staff that helps me do that. I have a property management company. Just like if all of you were my clients as a property manager, I'd have one bank account that all the tenants made their check out to, right? I wouldn't have 100 bank accounts. So there'd be the red, white, and blue property management account that all the tenants would make their rent checks out to. And then from that account, we write checks to the LLC beneficiaries.
So the tenants never see the beneficiary.
Exactly. The tenants never are in touch with the beneficiary.
And so does your management company retain any money, or does it pass it all back?
It's all passed through. Okay. It's only $1,000 of capital in that management company, so very little to sue for. Yes, ma'am.
So at what point in your career do you start a management company? When you get like three houses, or?
So she said, at what point do you start a management company? I'd do it on the first house, because you don't ever want the tenants making out a check directly to the beneficiary, because that exposes the beneficiary.
Okay.
Okay? Yes, sir.
So if I have debt on the property, can I still put it in a trust, or is the bank going to say, oh, you don't own it anymore, now your trust owns it, how are they paying the debt?
Okay, so he says if he has debt on the property, can he still put it into a land trust? And the answer is yes. I don't deal with national banks like Bank of America and Chase and all those guys. They got too many rules, and I'm not a real good rule follower. But I like regional banks. And to back up a minute, the national banks will make you a loan that's a 30-year fixed rate loan, that gets sold to the feds. It's called a conventional loan. You can only get four or five of those, and then they shut you off. So if you're very active in this business, you're going to have a lot more than four or five loans. At that point, you're forced to go to a portfolio lender, which is more like a regional bank. And the regional banks don't sell their loans to the feds, and they will let you close directly from the seller into your trust, which is the smartest way to buy this stuff. So you're never in that chain of title. But let's say you're already on the title, you already have a loan, and you want to get off title and put it in the land trust. Does that trigger the due on sale clause? And you have two choices here. You can tell them or you don't tell them. So if you don't tell them, if it's a big bank like Chase and Bank of America, their right hand doesn't know what their left hand's doing anyway. They're just happy to get their mortgage payments. They're not going to take a good loan and make it bad. Plus, 99% of the time, they don't even find out that it happened. There's no deed police out there checking to see if you change the title on your property every day. So I've been teaching this to other real estate investors for 22 years, and I always ask in a crowd like this, have you ever had your loan called on a due on sale clause issue? And I've had one guy in 22 years that said yes, and I said, what were the consequences? And he said they made me take it out of the land trust and put it back in my name. That was it. But what I've done is I use all regional banks, and I just went to them and said, hey guys, I want to do some estate planning and put these properties into trusts. Is that okay? Every one of them said, yeah. And even put it in writing to me. They said it was okay for me to do that. So you tell them or don't tell them. But you don't ever say to a bank, I'm going to do some asset protection. Can I do this? You say, I'm doing estate planning. The only time you ever say asset protection is when you're talking to the IRS. Because estate planning to the IRS means you're not paying all the taxes they want, right? And they don't care about asset protection. There's just a little piece of side advice. Yes, sir?
So if I put it in a trust and I already own it, do I have to sell it, my property, to the trust?
Okay, so you're saying how do you get the property into the trust if you own it now in your name?
Right.
Most people don't sell it to the trust. They just transfer it. But if you want it to look legit, you're really, really serious about this, what you do is you sell it to the trustee of your trust, and you sell it on a contract with no payments and no interest for 5 years. And why do you do that? The IRS says you don't have to report a sale to them until the first dollar is received. So I'm not going to have to report that sale for 5 years, right? But if anybody's tracking you, it's a legitimate sale that's recorded at the courthouse and everything else. But I don't have to do anything for 5 years. So at the end of 5 years, I look around and say, is anybody suing me? No? Okay, well, might do this another 5 years. So you can sell it to your trustee through that, or you can just take a deed from you to your trust.
But then don't people, like, my thought is, somebody already knows I own it. They looked me up, they found out I own it. I put it in trust, and said, you just probably put it in your own trust.
Yeah, and that's a typical response. If I take it, if I'm in title now and I transfer out of the title to my trust, doesn't everybody know that's me? Well, no, because when I buy property, I buy it in a trust. So it could have been my trust that bought it from you.
Okay.
Now, your debt is still going to be on the property, so it looks like a contract sale until you refinance or sell the property. Now, ultimately, you'll want to refinance, and when you refinance or you're buying a new property, your trustee will sign the mortgage, not you.
Who is the trustee?
That was my question.
Who's the trustee? You could be my trustee.
Anybody
can be a trustee.
But don't they have control over all your properties?
They do not have control over your properties. What you're thinking of, and this is a common misconception, especially among lawyers, you're thinking of a living trust. A living trust is trustee-driven. That means the trustee makes all the decisions on what happens inside that trust. Beneficiaries don't. A land trust is just the opposite. It's beneficiary-driven. The beneficiaries make all the decisions on what happens inside that trust, and the trustee just goes along for a ride.
And the beneficiary is the LLC.
Beneficiary is the LLC, and you're in control of that, so ultimately you're the one that's calling the shots. My trustee, I like to use individuals out of state with a different last name. Yes, ma'am. How do you get around a bad trustee? Or just, you know, how you fire a trustee. One of the forms, if you become a student of mine, one of the forms you get from me is called an appointment of trustee. You can hire and fire trustees every day if it makes you happy. It's you have total control.
Anyone need their signature?
It makes things a little smoother if you do get their signature, but you don't have to have it. Let me give you an example. Because people usually ask me, well, what happens if my trustee dies? Goes crazy, disappears. I want to fire him. I've had 9 trustees die in the last 45 years using these trusts. And when the first one died, I kind of panicked. I thought, oh my God, I lost my property. It's in a dead man's name. So I sweat bullets for about a year, and then I woke up and I thought, why do I need a live trustee?
So we should pick somebody who's on their deathbed?
They got one leg in and one leg out, you know? So
just go to the cemetery and write down the name.
Well, no, I think it's important you start out with a live trustee. But it occurred to me, I didn't need a live trustee unless I was doing one of two things. I was selling the property out of the trust. I need a trustee's signature, right? Or I'm putting financing on the property in the trust. I need the trustee to sign the mortgage. But if I wasn't doing one of those two things, I didn't need a live trustee. So I left the title in that man's name for 15 years before I sold the property. And 3 days before closing, I marched into Chicago Title, where I do all my business. And I said, my trustee died. Here's the appointment of the new one. Close the deal. And I learned a lot that day. Now, in some cases, not all, but in some cases, when you're suing a trust, you have to serve the trustee. Is anybody listening? You have to serve the trustee. How do you serve these guys 6 feet under? I don't know. Yes, sir.
Rather than an LLC, it's your IRA or sole 401k as a beneficiary. What changes, restrictions, or variations would you need to do for a land trust, for trustees, or people paying rent?
Really not much, sir. And if you become a student of mine, I give you a 40-page trust agreement. Now, you can get a free one on the internet, a couple pages, but you're getting what you pay for there. 40 pages, and there's lots of really cool stuff in that trust agreement. But what was your question again about transferring?
I'm not
saying
regarding transferring, but if your beneficiary land trust is an IRA or
sold. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I've got a Roth IRA. When I buy real estate using the Roth money, I title the real estate in the land trust, and I make the beneficiary of the land trust my Roth IRA. The trust agreement's not recorded anywhere on planet Earth, so nobody knows this, that my Roth is behind it. You see, the alternative is you buy the property and title it in your Roth. That's bad news. You don't want to do that. So you just make it the beneficiary. There's no registry for land trusts. You can't look up who owns the land trust. I get calls. What's interesting, every week I get a call from somebody, because if you go on Google and you type in land trust, you get me. And I've got my office line on there. And my office line is forwarded to my cell phone 24 hours a day. So I get a lot of these calls. Hello, is this the Virginia Land Trust? No, it isn't. Can I help you? Well, yeah, I want to talk about those damn tenants you got across the street and just go off, you know. And I said, wait a minute, slow down. I'm not the trustee for every land trust in America, and I have no idea what you're talking about. Well, I want to talk to the owner about those damn tenants. Well, I'm sorry, but you can't. Well, what do you mean? The reason why they put it in the land trust is so they don't get these calls. Do you understand? Well, how do I get a hold of them? Well, the only thing you can do is there's an address on the deed. If you look up the deed in the county recorder's office, there's an address, because there's got to be an address on the deed for your tax bill, right? And you can send them a letter. Now, I know not everybody understands what a letter is these days, but it's something you write down and you put in the mail. And if they want to respond, they will. And if they don't, they won't. But that's the beauty of these land trusts. It gives you total privacy. And that's what you need as a real estate investor, because there's an oxymoron in our business. The more successful you become, the greater target you are for a lawsuit. Yes, sir.
I have a question relating to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you have a trust in which you deed property, and this property, well, the trust then, has a custodian. The custodian is your Roth IRA custodian. Is that, am I getting that right?
Yes, you put the custodian of your Roth as the beneficiary of the trust. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So, as far as getting financing for something in a trust, who's the borrower?
Okay, how do you get financing of a property in a trust? The borrower is you. Borrower is you. You qualify.
Also, LLC, or?
No, you qualify. You're going to qualify with your own personal financial information. They're going to make the loan to you. You're going to sign a guarantee and or a note, but that goes in the banker's file. It doesn't get recorded anywhere. The trustee who owns the property is going to sign a mortgage. The mortgage is collateral for your loan. The bank says, we're going to loan you this money. We think you're a good guy, but it's not going to be non-recourse. We need some sort of collateral. And you say, oh, okay, well, I got this house over here. How about that? Yeah, okay, so the mortgage is signed by the trustee as collateral for your loan.
The note is for you, but the mortgage the trustee signs.
Right, the mortgage the trustee signs, the note's for you. And here's what's really cool about this. When the bank reports on the payments, the trustee is not personally liable. So they don't report against the trustee's name personally. And you didn't sign the mortgage, and they don't report on notes. So kind of like sounds like I could own millions of dollars worth of real estate, and you could run a credit report on me, and nothing would show up. That might be a benefit, right? Yeah, think of it this way. I know everybody always thinks that the buying property and owning property is one and the same thing, but it's not. I could buy a house and give it to you, and I can be the guy on the mortgage. You own it, but I'm on the mortgage. So they're two. Think of it in two separate ways. And what's happening when the trustee signs the mortgage because they own the property. They're entitled to the property. But the bank loans the money to you, and you personally guarantee it. But that documentation is not recorded. So it's all private. Yes, sir?
What are you paying the trustees?
What do I pay my trustees?
Compensation.
Yeah.
How are they not considered employees?
Oh, they're definitely not considered employees. And I hope to pay them nothing. Because I got a lot of trusts, and that would be very expensive. So most of my trustees, I don't pay anything. But anybody can be a trustee, and I have a whole chapter in my home study course on who can be and who should be your trustee. But it should be somebody with a different last name and somebody that lives out of the county in which the property is located.
Okay, so, but you've got if you came to me and said, would you be my trustee? I'd say, you can hide it.
Well, maybe. Unless, how about if I came to you and said, will you be my trustee? And I'll be your trustee. And we won't charge each other.
That works.
That works, doesn't it? So a lot of my students that come to my trainings and get my home study course will do that. They'll be each other's trustee. remember, you can fire these people in a moment's notice. But ideally, it would be somebody who might have a financial interest in you. I have two daughters. They both got married, fortunately. And what happens to a girl when she gets married?
Last name
changes the last name. You're pretty sharp. You dress like an Eskimo, but you're sharp. So if you can get the kids involved, and maybe even grandkids involved, because they're the ones going to have to deal with this stuff. So I had both my daughters and their son-in-laws, and my son-in-laws were required to take my basic home study course and my advanced home study course. I didn't charge them, but they did have to come to them because someday they're going to have to deal with these trusts. Plus, they got involved in real estate way young. At 4 and 8 years old, I got them involved in real estate. So they're learning the program, and I think that's important that you teach the kids this stuff, not only because they're going to need to know it when they inherit it, but so they can start building wealth at a very young age, too. I mean, can you imagine buying houses at 4 years old? You got three amortizations in you. Three 25-year amortizations in you at age four.
Yeah.
So, you know, the old adage, you want to be a millionaire, you borrow $1 million and have somebody else pay it off. So at age four, you borrow $1 million, and 25 years later, you're 29 years old, and you got $1 million.
Who's lending $1 million to a four-year-old?
Who's loaning $1 million to a four-year-old? Well, you'd be surprised. Yes, sir.
What's the risk of putting yourself on
as trustee? Well, number one, it's not a good idea because there goes your anonymity, right?
Really? I mean, if the beneficiary isn't disclosed, you're the trustee. You are just technically perceived as the trustee.
Technically, you are the trustee, but it puts you out there as the title holder. It connects you to the property. You don't want to do that. That's reason number one. Reason number two is, in most states, to my knowledge, Florida is the only state that I know of that allows what's called a merging of interest. A trust agreement is a contract. And in all states except Florida, you can't have a contract with yourself. And that's what you're doing. If you're the trustee and the beneficiary, you have a contract with yourself. Well, your LLC is a beneficiary, but you own the LLC, so it all comes together. It's just not a good idea.
I'm just curious what the risks are for it.
Yeah, it's just not a good idea. It's much better to use other people as trustees. Now, you can use institutions, and if you can't find somebody, I can refer you to trustee services. In fact, at the bookstore, my assistant is over there. Her name's Sasha. She has a trustee service for people that just either can't find somebody or don't want it, you know, they don't like any of their relatives. Yes, ma'am.
A few years back, you used to refer to Virginia, or West Virginia, was it?
Virginia.
And now you seem to refer to Florida. Could you expand on that?
Yes, yeah. So Virginia's got really good trust law, but they require any Virginia land trust to have a Virginia trustee. And not everybody knows somebody in Virginia. So Florida has terrific trust law, and they do not require a Florida trustee. In fact, they just amended their trust statute about 4 or 5 years ago, and it says that you can't sue the trustee of a land trust, and you can't sue the beneficiary. You can only sue the trust itself and whatever assets are in the trust. That's pretty powerful stuff. Now, I should back up and say, because I know this sounds a bit confusing, we're in, Ohio? Were we in Ohio? there are only 6 or 7 states that have an actual land trust statute. Ohio's not one of them. But all states recognize the validity of a land trust through what's called the Good Faith and Credit Act that all the states signed a long time ago, back in the 30s or something, and that basically says we're going to respect each other's laws. So, since there's no federal land trust law, it's all state by state, you could form a Florida land trust to hold title to your property in Ohio or anywhere. And then if you made the beneficiary of the trust your Wyoming LLC, now you got 3 states' laws involved in this property. Kind of sounds like maybe they ought to go sue somebody else, huh? Yes, sir.
So I've heard stories about your trustee, which in the, like you said, you need the trustee when you get ready to sell the property. The evil trustee who goes and sells your property when you didn't want him to. And you find out you're not the owner anymore. How do you avoid that?
Well, certainly the trustee, you want to pick somebody that you trust, if you can. But that can change. Land trust came about 2,000 years ago in England. And they came about because the king would send all the men away to fight wars, and he'd steal their property while they were gone, and a few wives. And so they came up with this idea, well, you know, Billy Bob, who's 112, he's not going to war because he's too old. Billy Bob, would you hold title to my real estate while I'm gone so the king doesn't steal it? And that went on for 2,000 years. Well, when we came over from England, our laws, a common law, escheated, they call it. It came over, so a lot of our law is based on England's laws. And so 125 years ago, Chicago Title formed the first land trust in America to create a suburb of Chicago. So what my point is, if it were that easy to steal your property as a trustee, nobody would ever use these things. It would have died a long time ago. There are checks and balances. When you go to sell a property, the title company is going to say, we want to see a copy of the trust agreement. We want to see the beneficiary, ID for the beneficiary. We want to see the letter of direction from the beneficiary directing the trustee to sign the deed. So the trustee can't just walk in and say, I'm entitled, because it'll say Randy Hughes, comma, trustee. And if I go into the title company and say, here's a deed, I'm selling the property, they're going to say, wait a minute, your you're not holding this personally, you're holding it as a trustee. We want to see the trust agreement, letter of direction, blah, 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 blah. So there are checks and balances. Now, having said that, I can do pretty much any, I can sell your house if you own title to it right now, if I get enough people to collude with me, right? Title company, maybe an attorney. So whether you're using a trust or not, if you're talking about collusion, then there's nothing you can do about that. But it just hardly ever happens.
There has to be a clause in the trust that there has to be a letter of direction from the beneficiary.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's another form you'd get from me. Yes, ma'am.
So I've heard it's advantage to do wholesale in land trust tax-wise. And can you talk about how that process works? To do wholesaling in a land trust?
Well, yeah. I think you can use a land trust in all forms of our business of making money in the real estate business, whether it's a wholesale deal, a contract assignment, an option. I use a trust in every instance. If you're talking about air rights, mineral rights, options, I love pure options myself. I like to buy, I mean, just think of it this way. What's the average home price here in this area? Do you know? Does anybody know?
My market is $350.
$350. Did it go up any last year?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit? Maybe 10%? 20%? To make math easy, let's say the average home price last year was $300,000. And you had a one-year option to buy it, and it goes up 10%. Kind of sounds like you made 30 grand, doesn't it? Just by holding an option. So I had a guy once I was talking to, and he was complaining about the heat going out his windows and how high his utility bills were. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, because we got these old windows. They're single-pane metal frame windows. And the heat just goes right out, and we got these outrageous utility bills. And I said, well, why don't you buy new windows? He said, because I don't have the money. I said, so how much would it cost? $3,000. Okay. I said, I'll buy you new windows if you give me an option to buy your house in 5 years at a price we agree on today. That's a pure option. No lease, no tenants, no toilets, no liability, nothing. I just have the right to buy his house in 5 years for this price. Can you see how that might make you some money? How if you'd had an option 5 years ago on houses and what they're worth today? That's some serious cash. So 5 years goes by. I just forget about it. He calls me in 5 years and he said, well, I know, Randy, you got the right to buy my house and the deal's a deal, but we really don't want to move. Is there anything we can do? I said, yeah, I don't really want to buy your house. You can buy the option back. And he did. Where did he get the money?
He saved up all the money.
He refinanced because his house went up in value. He refinanced and paid me off.
With
so,
interest, right?
A lot more than just interest. Yeah, so a lot more.
How much did he pay you back?
Well, he gave me my $3,000 back, plus I think it was $10,000 or $15,000 on top of that, something like that.
How did that happen?
We negotiated. That's what I said I wanted, to release that option. Otherwise, I was going to buy the house.
Okay.
So that wasn't much money, really. It wasn't much of a return. Yes, sir?
Did you hold that in a trust, that option?
Yes. I held the option in a trust. I recorded a memorandum of option at the county recorder's office, which means it was like a second mortgage, so he couldn't sell the house out from underneath my option. So there are ways you need to protect yourself, but options are terrific, and lease options are great, but these pure options are wonderful. And what's really cool is creditors don't look at options as assets because they have to do something. If you owe somebody money and they are coming after you, they want cash, you know, or some sort of asset. They don't want an option on something they got to buy and finance and all that. So in a perfect world, if all your assets were held in options, you'd be judgment proof. Yes, sir.
So going back to land trust.
Yeah.
So if you have an LLC that owns rentals and you have insurance like umbrella policies, et cetera, is the covered insured or named insured party is the beneficiary of the...
You're asking how do you insure a property held in the land trust?
Yeah.
Okay. So I got a whole chapter on how to insure a property, but let me give you the short version, okay? The named insured on the policy is the trustee because they're the owner. A lot of insurance agents just don't get it. And they say, oh, no, we need to make you the named insured. And I say, okay, so you're allowing me to buy insurance on a house I don't own? If you're going to do that, then I want to buy insurance on every house in America. And then they're scratching their head. So it's the named insured is the trustee because they own the property, and all beneficiaries as their interest may appear. That's terminology from the insurance companies. All beneficiaries as their interest may appear. The beautiful thing about that is you don't name the beneficiaries. You ever been to a party and you're talking to an insurance agent and you get a couple drinks in you and he says, oh, do you see Bob over there? Yeah, I insure him. He's got $5 million worth of real estate. They're not supposed to say that, but it happens, doesn't it?
So in that case, the house burns down. The trustee, the check comes in their name only as trustee, or that and the beneficiary?
Yeah. It's supposed to come in the name of the trustee and any mortgage company, if you have a mortgage on it, which can be a problem because we don't have bank accounts. The trustee doesn't have a bank account. And it just depends on what insurance company you deal with. And I've dealt with this problem before. In my Land Trust University, which is where I keep all my forms for my students, I invented a form that... basically is from the trustee authorizing payment to the beneficiary. And we do that with title companies when we're selling. We do it with banks when we're refinancing. And we do it with insurance companies on insurance claims. Now, I'll give you a prime example. 2 years ago last July, we had a huge hailstorm in my town. I got an insurance claim on 48 roofs. I got 48 new roofs. There were two insurance companies involved. One adjuster, I said, hey, would you just make the check out to the beneficiary, the LLC? Oh, yeah, no problem. The other adjuster said, oh, no, we can't do that. We've got to make it out to the trustee. So this is a good example of why you need to build a team around you if you're going to be in this business. You need a banker, a lawyer, a title company, an insurance agent. Because what I did with that check, they gave me like a $180,000 check. I went down to the bank. I used to, before 2001, when they came up with the Patriot Act, I used to be able to go to the bank with trustee checks and just turn them over, put deposit only, and put it wherever I wanted. Now they got all these new rules. But I've found that even though the banks all say they follow the same rules, they don't. And if you do business with somebody, that's why you need to build a relationship with these people. I skip the teller because the teller won't put it where I want it. And I go to Banker Bob and say, Banker, I got a check here to my trustee. Would you help me at the teller desk? We go out to the teller desk. He turns the check over. I sign it as agent for the trust. He signs it for the bank. It goes right into my account. Yes, sir.
Well, with that... address and on file with the insurance company, even though the trustee is named, is it your P.O. box?
Yes.
So any check would have been mailed to you and you're in control anyway.
Right. Yeah, it all comes to me. Now, what's interesting about this is in 1999, I bought 30 houses from one guy. He and his partner had 200 houses, and they were splitting up, and he'd sold 70 of his 100, and he had 30 left, so I bought 30 from him. And one of those houses burnt down. 8-year-old boy has his friend over for Saturday night. They get up Sunday morning before the rest of the family's awake, and they decide they're going to cook breakfast. Next thing you know, the whole house is on fire. Fortunately, Dad pulled everybody out the windows. No hurt, nobody hurt, but totally destroyed the house. So the insurance company sent me a check for a house. But they're supposed to make it out to the trustee and the bank, because I did have a loan on the house. They just made the check out to my trustee. So I had a decision to make, didn't I? Do I cash the check and keep making mortgage payments on a house that doesn't exist? Or do I pay off the loan? See, there are crazy things that happen in this business, and that's why you need to prepare for these crazy things. Yes, sir.
I heard a question earlier about wholesaling. Could you give an example of how a wholesaler could utilize a trust in a wholesale transaction?
Well, I think you're talking about either a wholesale contract assignment or maybe even a sale of the property. They're all kind of the same thing. And what you do is you want to hold title in the trust. And then what you can do...
Wholesaler doesn't have title. Wholesaler has a contract that says they have the option to buy, which is they want to sell that piece of paper. I guess I wasn't clear how a trust would apply there.
Well, if all they hold is a contract to buy, I would hold that contract in the name of my trust. I wouldn't have it in my name. I always hold everything in some kind of trust. It's interesting. Lots of investors want to use these trusts because you can't track what they're doing. I had a student the other day. He said to me, there's a guy in my town who's very successful, and he's using this certain technique, and I'm tracking him. And I finally figured out what he's doing, and I'm going to start doing it. The guy just created his own competition by using his name. If he'd been using a trust, this guy wouldn't have been able to figure out what he was doing. Yes, sir.
Can a land trust be used to protect against deed stealing?
Protect against what?
Deed stealing.
Deed stealing? Well, like I said, you know, you can, if you get enough people to collude, you can steal whether it's in a trust or not in a trust. I think it does help because then you need all these other parties, you know, the trust agreement and the letter of direction and all that.
I'm thinking it's harder to get the person, but they use just a similar name and send them a quitclaim deed.
They use what name?
In other words, if somebody, a Mary Jones owns a property,
uh-huh.
You've got going out finding somebody with a similar name, Mary Jones, and they're getting a quitclaim deed from them. Then they go to the house, and the person's already in financial trouble. This is, what are you doing in my house? Knowing they don't have enough money to go get a lawyer to file a suit to get their own house back.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's a way we can use a land trust to
Well, I think the fact that there are these checks and balances for a land trust that you don't have on a standard deed would certainly help avoid that process. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Randy, I wanted to say I took a land trust course in Southern California last year, about a year ago. It was a great course. It was a couple people in Ward. And I really loved the information yesterday. So I did buy everything yesterday. I planned to do that.
Thank you.
I'm in the middle of about to transfer all my properties that's owned in an LLC and notes that I deal with to start dealing with that. But my question is, if you do pick a trustee, even though they're easy to fire, could you get a power of attorney to sign for that trustee?
You could, yes, but you don't need to because you're going to have a successor trustee named in the trust agreement. And if you want to, kind of a suspenders, belt and suspenders approach to this is name the successor trustee in the deed.
Oh.
And that way they're already on title. They don't have any power yet, but the succession is right there and it's easy for the title companies to deal with.
One other question, because I have several companies, et cetera, and various unit numbers, which is like a PO box and an actual like PO box. If I'm going to do this and put in trustee, then I need to create another box that's not associated, because if you put that address in, one of my companies will pop up. So because that's what we do at business.
Right.
So I'm thinking another box, my wife's going to like this, but just for the title, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. He's talking about having a separate PO box from the one he uses for other businesses. Yes, I would definitely do that. Wait a minute, you just made me think of something on PO boxes because somebody asked me yesterday, well, can't they track my PO box? Well,
they could on a website. If you have a PO box with your company name on a website, not thinking, then they do a Google search, then that could pop up accidentally.
Right. If you had your company name on the PO box.
Where they can publicized. So it's only for this purpose.
Yeah.
And I don't think only the government can get a hold of who owns
it. Yeah, you can't just walk into a post office and say, who owns this box? Now, how do you get a P.O. box that's not attached to you?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, because they always want you to own.
Well, there are services, but they'll want you. You got to go in and show your ID.
Yeah, your ID.
You ever see these guys sitting in the middle of the street on a median? They got a sign. give me free money. Give me free money. I don't want to work. Say, tell you what, how'd you like to have $100? Get in the car. We're going to the post office. He opens a P.O. box. You don't give him the $100 till he gives you both keys. You take him back, drop him off at the highway, and now you got a P.O. box that can't be traced to you.
In
his name.
He's got to have some kind of ID.
Yeah, he's got to have an ID to open it. Yeah, but it doesn't attach to me in any way, shape, or form. Yes, ma'am, you've been very patient. Thank you.
And I might have just missed it, but if you have a trustee, who's over
the... If you have a trustee that's what?
You
have a trustee.
So let's say somebody does sue. The trustee.
They sue the trustee.
Yeah. What kind of issue is that for them? Like, what do they do?
So she said, what happens when a lawsuit is initiated and they do sue the trustee?
Yes.
Well, number one, that's why we use trustees out of the county in which the property is located. Because if you'll notice on the deed, it doesn't show the trustee's address. You don't know even what state they live in. So it's pretty hard to find these trustees. Now, my brother called me the other day, and he said that he was a trustee on a land trust for a friend of his, and the friend was in foreclosure, and they served my brother. How they found him, I don't know. And so what should he do? I said, resign. Just resign.
That starts it all over.
That starts it all over again. They got to figure out who the successor is. One of my students, and I don't encourage you to do this, but it just happened to one of my students. He got divorced, had financial troubles, went into foreclosure. It took the lender 4 years because he'd put it in a land trust. So it took the lender 4 years to foreclose because they wanted to serve the beneficiary, they wanted to serve the successor trustees. It was what we call from the central part of Illinois a muck and fess. Yes, sir. I'll be right to you, sir.
About the trustee being trust on the deed for 5 minutes, and then they resign, and it falls to the successor trustee, which is the document.
Yeah.
That person can legitimately be served with a court order, and they really don't know who the successor trustee is.
You're exactly right, and here's how this works. One of my banks said to me once, Randy, we're not real comfortable with these out-of-state trustees that you're using. Can't you use somebody locally? I said, sure. How about Rick, my attorney? Because I'm paying Rick to be at the closing anyway. And they said, oh, yeah, we know Rick. That'd be great. So we close the deal. Rick signs everything as trustee. It all gets recorded in Rick's name. And the next day I fired Rick, and I hired a different trustee out of state. So that's a technique that we use. So I had this lady. I've got 5 buildings, 2 condos per building on a corner in my town. Each unit is in a separate trust. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we were having trouble with every Saturday night there was brouhaha in the neighborhood. So upon my investigation, I found that it was, no matter who was involved, there was one female tenant always at the heart of trouble. So when her lease came up for renewal, I said, we're not renewing your lease. And she was mad as a hornet. She said, well, I pay my rent on time. I've been here 3 years. I want to stay here. I said, sorry. The owner told me not to renew your lease. That's another benefit of using these trusts. It's a degree of separation between you as owner, because if they think you are the owner, they're going to treat you differently than if you're just a low life, hate my job, I can't wait till the bar's open, property manager. Leave me alone. Well, if it was up to me, I'd lower your rent, but I'm not in control here. So I didn't renew a lease. I forgot about it, went back to the office. 3 days later, I get a call from my lawyer's secretary. Randy, there's a lady down here in the lobby raising hell wanting to speak to your attorney. What do you want us to do with her? I said, throw her out, and if she won't leave voluntarily, call the police. What has she done? She typed in her address, found out the owner was my attorney for one day. And attorneys, of course, their address is in the phone book, so she marched on down and demanded to talk to the owner. But he wasn't the owner anymore. So it's button, who's got the button, you know? Remember that game? Okay, sir, you've been very patient. You had a question.
As far as the trustee, are you able, does it have to be a person, or could it be an out-of-state entity or a bank account, or does that have
Well, it can't be, he said, who can be a trustee? It can't be a bank account. It has to be either an institution or a human being. But Chicago Title, for example, they have a land trust department. They'll only be trustee on a land trust in three states. They're the largest trustee in America. They are trustee on 66,000 land trusts in three states.
Is Ohio one of those?
Ohio's not one of them. But some states require an entity that's a trustee to be bonded, insured, and licensed, and have a minimum net worth of $2 million. So it's just much easier to have an individual. They're harder to find. They can easily get their signature notarized. I just love individuals as trustees. A common name. Yeah, yeah, thanks for reminding me. You know, if I was in South Central LA and my trustee's name was Garcia, it might be kind of hard to find that guy, right? If I was in San Francisco and my trustee's name was Chin, it might be kind of hard to find those folks. Yes, ma'am.
Going back to wholesaling, those contracts would be under what kind of trust?
A land trust. The land trust would hold...
The land trust too?
Yeah, the land trust, because land trusts hold any type of real estate. And a contract to buy real estate is a type of real estate. Okay. And we'll get to that. I've got some other thoughts on it in a minute. Yes, sir.
Two quick questions. One, that if a trustee can resign, wouldn't you want to put the trustee down as you pour it and immediately just fire him so that you pick another one? So that immediately makes a problem. And two, if the property was sued and the trustee can just resign, there's really no liability for the trustee because he can resign, because the trust is what really is. But
right. They're not suing the trustee. They're not suing the trustee as an individual. They're suing him as trustee, which is
how they serve him.
That's how they serve him. And the whole idea is to get the trustee into court and bend their thumbs back and say, all right, we got you. Who's really in control? Who's the beneficiary? But my trust agreement says that if my trustee even smells a lawsuit coming, she must immediately resign and forward all documentation to the successor trustee, which is in another state. So now you more legal fees.
Okay, so if that trustee, though, resigned, what if you immediately filed your land trust with your trustee and you fired them 3 days later, so you have that name. So you get a lawsuit coming to that PO box of John Smith, and John Smith was fired 5 years ago. What would the beneficiary in that case of that box have to do with that? Just go, trash it?
Well, he's asking about if there's a lawsuit against the trust and slash trustee.
He's no longer around.
They typically start, if they don't know where the trustee lives, they would send a registered letter to the address on the deed.
Okay.
I don't sign for registered anything unless I can see it's a check from the IRS. But other than that, I don't sign for registered mail, and all my employees are instructed to never do it. I had a student call me a couple years ago and said, oh gosh, they served my trustee in a lawsuit, the tenants did. What do I do now? I said, well, let's back up a minute. How did they find your trustee? Oh, well, I had her address on the deed. You don't do that. You know, you just don't do that. The address on the deed can be anywhere on planet Earth. And certainly you don't want it to be your trustee's address. That's crazy.
Box, and it goes there, and there's someone there to sign, like an employee of a unit number where all the boxes are. They sign for certified checks.
Yeah, you tell them, no, you don't sign for me.
Oh.
You're not going to sign for my registered mail. Yes, sir, in the back, in the blue. Okay.
My question to you is I use IRA, self-directed IRAs. And what I've done on my properties, I always just register as the name of the account number. So the only thing they have is an account number.
You register what, sir?
Well, what it shows in the deed is it says something like equity trust, FBO, a number. That, or CAM or whatever. So that's kind of thought, because I know that in a self-directed IRA, it has the same protection like the leaves, trust does. But so if they wanted to try to serve, would they like send a registered letter to Equity Trust or my custodian? Is that how that would probably work?
Well, yeah, if that's on the deed. See, you got to understand, everything funnels down to that deed. That's where everything starts, what's recorded. And so if you make it possible to be contacted via that deed, that's going to solve a whole lot of problems in life. So I wouldn't put Equity Trust's name on there because they could serve Equity Trust on your behalf. I would just put the trustee's name and your P.O. box, wherever that is.
So the trustee would be someone other than them?
Right, yeah. Your IRA is going to be the beneficiary.
So you basically create a trust outside of your IRA, and then the beneficiary is your IRA.
Exactly. Your IRA is the beneficiary, which, remember, there's no way of looking up who owns a trust. And the trustee is on the deed with a P.O. box, but you don't know where that trustee lives. Okay? Yes, sir.
Could you send institution or so? Could you have a trust as the trustee in any way?
Could you have a trust as a trustee? Well, you can have an entity. It could be an LLC or whatever. But like I said earlier, some states require entities that are trustees to be insured and bonded and all that.
California doesn't require
it. No. No. But the problem with California is you can only be the trustee on a land trust in California for up to 3 trusts without being a lawyer or a trust service and then being registered and licensed. So they kind of limit that. Now, where I'm splitting hairs with them is my students in California, we're not forming California trusts. We're forming Florida or Virginia or whatever trusts. So we say, well, that law doesn't apply to us because we're not trustees on a California trust. Yes, sir.
So two things. So you mentioned that the trustee's name on the P.O. box is identifiable. And that's potentially, I guess, where somebody could send notice certified
now. They could. They could if you signed for it, yeah.
You may not actually sign for it, but that's the location, right?
Right.
So in answer to your other question way earlier is how do you serve a trustee who can't really be found? Can't you just throw it into the public newspaper?
Well, yeah, he's saying, how do you serve a trustee that can't be found? Depending on what kind of lawsuit it is, they can serve publicly, which means 3 times in the newspaper. So they can get service, but it's just another hurdle. It's more expense, it's more time consuming, and every time a lawyer picks up a pen, it's going to cost you. And unless there's a whole lot of money and you've really wronged somebody, it's just a heck of a lot easier to sue somebody that doesn't use a trust. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so when you were saying earlier, like with the wholesale deal, and when you say hold a contract in the trust, you just mean that the trust is the buyer, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then would you, when you transfer that trust to the end buyer, do you sell the beneficial interest, or do you put it in it, like an LLC that you create for the purpose of just selling that LLC and then sell the LLC to the end buyer, or how do you do that?
Well, it's kind of like short sales. You know, there's a aging process required on the deed. It's got to be in the same name for like 6 months before you can resell it. You know what I'm talking about? There's a term for that. What is it?
Seasoning.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to think of. So the beautiful thing is, whatever you're doing, if you think you're going to be reselling it and you don't want to worry about this seasoning issue, is you buy it in the trust. The owner, the buyer, is the trustee in the trust. Now, the beneficial interest, I could come to this meeting and say, hey guys, I got this killer deal. There's 50 grand of equity, but I need groceries today. Give me 10 grand and you can have the 40. And I'm going to assign the beneficial interest to you. But the title still stays in the name of the trust, so we get the seasoning going on. So then if you later sell it to somebody getting a conventional loan and they look back at the seasoning, problem solved. Right? So same thing with contract assignments and short sales and all the rest. Yes, sir.
Then if my question is, I write offers in like the name of my LLC or one of my partnerships. If I'm writing an offer, I could still write it in my LLC, but just if I were actually going to buy it, just vested in the land trust.
Yeah, basically he's saying, how do you write the offer? So I used to write the offers, I'm sitting on the front porch, we're negotiating back and forth, and then I bring a formal contract to be signed in the name of my trust, and the home seller was saying, well, wait a minute, Randy, I thought I was negotiating with you. Who's this trustee and trust? And it kind of messed things up. So I go ahead and put the contract in my name personally, initially. But then before closing, the seller's attorney's going to say, okay, how do you want the deed to read? And I'll say, I want it in the name of Billy Bob Thornton and the Red, White, and Blue Land Trust. And because the contract's not recorded. So it solves all those negotiation problems. The only thing that gets recorded is the deed. Yes, ma'am, in the back.
Yeah, a couple of questions. First one is, how do you find so many trustees in different states when the first trustee and the secondary trustee ideally needs to be in different states?
How do I find how many, what, trustee?
Trustees.
Oh, different trustees?
You can kind of trust them.
If you get my home study course, it comes with a video of me teaching the material to a live audience. And I have a whole chapter on how to name and number your trust, and a whole chapter on who can be your trustee. And in that trustee chapter, I show you how you can take one person who agrees to be your trustee and turn them into 8, maybe 10 different people.
And
the beauty of that is, and that's another reason why I like trustees as individuals, not institutions, is that it's so much easier to get a notary to sign for an individual than for an entity. An entity, you're going to have to prove to somebody, either a closing agent, a title company, or an attorney, you're going to have to prove to them that they have the authority to sign on behalf of that entity. That will expose my operating agreement. I'm not going to show you my operating agreement unless you sue me. My operating agreement is 350 pages. You imagine what it's going to cost you just to have your attorney to read it? But you're going to have to sue me to get it. So I can take one person who agrees to be my trustee and turn them into 10 different names on the deeds so they're not all traced together. Is that what you're talking about, ma'am? Wait a minute, so can you speak a little bit louder? I can't hear you.
I'm just saying that we've got one trustee who is of Hispanic origin, and they already cover 4 names.
That's true. The Hispanics already have 4 names, so we can probably turn them into 30 names. Yes, ma'am.
How do they get them to live in different states? Because you can change the name. You said ideally you want the trustee living in, say, Georgia, secondary trustee in Florida.
No, I'm not saying you have to have a trustee from every all your trustees have to live in different states. You could have one trustee in Florida that we turn into 10 different people on the deeds. So we can have 10 properties with 10 different trustees' names and one person really behind it all.
Okay, and then the second question was, you said just an example with the 5 condos that have different trusts. So presumably you have different trustees for each of those 5 trusts. And then were you coming as like the managing agent? So at that point you collect the rent in your own account?
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a property manager. I don't own anything. Property managers are what, right above car salesmen?
Yeah.
So I want to be the biggest loser on the planet. I work at that. There's an old saying, if you want to be famous out of town, right? Don't be famous in your own town. So, yeah, I'm just a property manager.
So all the money comes to your account?
Money comes to my property management account, and that's then gets dispersed out. Yes, in the back there.
Okay. So when you go to the closing, do you actually show your paperwork to the closer, the trust agreement?
No. if the title company requests a copy of the trust agreement, I'll give them a form that I can give you. It's called a trust certification.
Is it in the package?
Yes. And it's kind of like an abstract. It's like a two-page document that says, I'm affirming this is the name of the trust, this is the trustee, this is the date of the trust, but it doesn't give them the full 40-page trust agreement. Now, some title companies, for my students, are saying, we got to have the whole damn thing. So my philosophy is, and I don't mean to offend anybody in here that works for the government, but if you can't outsmart government employees, then you might as well go home and go to bed. So what I do for my students in those areas where they got to have the full trust agreement, these trusts are called grantor revocable trusts. Revocable means you can change it. You can change it every day of your life if that makes you happy. So what that means is I can take my 40-page trust agreement and amend it today down to 5 pages. Take all the good stuff out. Now, as of today forward, that's my trust agreement. Now, I come to the title company, say, here's what you want. And I say, okay, we're good. I go back, I amend it back to 40 pages. Just outsmart them. Yes, sir. No, wait a minute. Yeah?
The other question was for private lending purposes.
Uh-huh.
Do your forms provide mortgage holding trust? Can you use your forms for a mortgage?
Yeah. The very last page of my trust agreement is for it's to state what's in this trust. Now, typically, it's a legal description and the common address because it's real estate. But if it's an option, you just put option to blah, blah, blah. Or you say, there are rights to such and such building or whatever is going in that trust. It's on the very last page.
I guess I'll talk to you after. Okay. The program, but I have questions.
Okay, we'll talk after. I'm around all day and tomorrow morning. Yes, sir.
So if I manage my own properties, I'm allowed to, but if I manage other people's properties, I have to have a broker's license.
Right.
So if I put my properties in a trust and then I don't own them anymore, do I need to have a broker's license to manage my own?
So he's asking, if he doesn't own the property anymore because they're in trust, does he have to have a broker's license now because he's managing other people's property? I don't know the state of Ohio, but in Illinois, I've checked into this, and they consider the fact that it all eventually gets down to me. They say if you hold property in a trust or an LLC, blah, 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 then you don't have to be licensed to manage other people's property. So you might just double check with your licensing bureau here in Ohio or wherever you live. Okay, yes, sir.
If he was in a state that where it was like that, like they was having a problem with that, he could always mass release it.
Yeah, he's a good point. He says if you are in a state like that, you could always master lease it, and then you would be managing your own stuff, supposedly. But, yes, sir? Who does the eviction for a trust? Good question. For probably 40 years, I did my own. And then they kicked that judge upstairs and brought in a new judge who actually read the Illinois law, and evidently on trusts, you have to either have the trustee come in or the beneficiary or hire a lawyer. Well, my trustees are out of town, out of state, so I'm not going to ask her to come in. And I'm sure not going to tell a judge who the beneficiary is. So I went to using lawyers. Yeah, and that costs you money, but I'd rather do that than give up the privacy element. Yes, sir.
So if you pick a trustee that is not the same county as the property, has a different last name, who say is a stepson in trust, but happens to also be on your payroll of one of your companies, is that relevant in any way?
No, I don't think it's relevant. I mean, I wouldn't have access to your payroll information. I couldn't get that unless it's through discovery, and then they can get everything through discovery. But that's down the road with a lawsuit and lots of money spent first, right? Yeah. So I don't think that's a problem.
Are your forms updated when the legislation starts to change? Any changes? Will it be automatically updated?
Is what automatically updated?
Your forms?
Oh, my forms. One reason why 13 years ago I formed the Land Trust University is just because of that, updating forms and things. So if you become my student, you have access to the Land Trust University online. That's an actual learning portal where you can not only get all the forms and everything that you've bought from me as a hard copy, but a whole bunch of other stuff. So if I update a form, it goes in there and you have access. If I, like my trust agreement, it's a 6.0 version. Okay? If I invent a new form, update a form, whatever it is, it goes in there and the students get it. What's really cool is I have all kinds of stuff in there, like I have a letter that you can print out to hand to somebody to convince them to be your trustee. I've already done the work for you. Just print it out and hand it to them.
Is it on
the website? It's, and my website is, but you can't get into Land Trust University unless you're my student, but the website is landtrustmadesimple.com. Hold on just a second. I want to finish this thought. So this took me a year and a half to do, and I just finished it about 6 months ago. I wrote a package for your team. There's a package in there that you can print out to hand to your lawyer that explains trust law. If he doesn't understand it, it teaches him everything he needs to know about land trust. So if you don't want to change lawyers, but your lawyer doesn't know anything about land trust, print it out and hand it to him. It'll bring him up to speed. I have a packet for your insurance agent to help him understand how to insure the property. I have a packet for your title company and a packet for your insurance agent, attorney, title company, and the banker. So if the banker's never made a loan on property, there's a packet for him. So for your team of four people, I made it as easy as possible for you just to hand it to them so you can get out and do killer deals instead of worrying about paperwork. Okay, ma'am, sorry.
Okay, question is would I use the, can I use the same land trust over and over again? Because I know you said one trust for one property, but when you're wholesaling, it's literally in your hands for a few days.
Great question. She's saying, can you reuse a trust? The answer is yes, you can, but no, you shouldn't. You never know what kind of liability there is on property that you're dealing with. Did you know the EPA can go back 20 years on every person who owned property if they find gas tanks underneath and assess everybody for 20 years back? You don't want that to happen. Since it doesn't cost anything to form a land trust, just create a new one. Every time you're dealing with property, create a new one. There's a friend of mine down in Dallas, Texas, and I taught him about 10 years ago how to use trusts. And he was telling me a story the other day. He said that he owned some property, bare land with a lake on it in West Texas. The EPA came in and said, you need to do $50,000 worth of dredging and cleanup or whatever it was to this lake. He said, what? We don't even go out there to swim. It's just dirt, you know? Too bad. You got to do it. We'll give you 1 year to do it, and we're coming back. So 1 year later, the EPA came back and said, did you do it? And he said, no, I sold the property. Well, who'd you sell it to? I don't know, some trust bought it. The EPA is still trying to find that trust to hold somebody accountable.
Wow.
This is good stuff, folks.
So if you own a property, having a trust, it's been there for a few years, and then I sell my friend over here, could I just sell the beneficiary interest?
Yeah, you could just sell him the beneficial interest in the trust.
No one would see anything.
No one would see anything.
What about the whole stuff that all that's gone?
Yeah, would it become like uncapped for the taxes?
No, taxes aren't affected.
Because the title didn't change hands, only the interest changed
hands. Right, and the IRS considers it a sale, even if there's no title involved. You know, how many people buy property on contract for deed? The title doesn't change. And that's what's really cool about these things. I found that there's a whole lot of people in America that can never qualify for a conventional loan.
Yep.
But they want to buy a house, and they're good people, and they got money. So I've stepped in to fill that void, the humanitarian that I am. And so I buy a house, and I sell it immediately the same day to somebody that can't qualify for a loan. Of course, I mark it up because that's fair to me. and I charge them 7 or 8%, depending on the market. They make payments to me, and I go out and borrow the money, and I make payments to my bank. But before the interest rates went up, I was paying 5%, they were paying 7%, I was making 2% on the bank's money and 7% of my equity. These are good, solid people that can't qualify for a loan. They're self-employed less than 2 years. Their debt-to-income ratio's off. They don't have a Social Security number. A lot of folks out there like that. But it's a great way to build equity and build cash flow in this business is you be the bank. Now, where can it go wrong? They stop making payments, right? You don't want to foreclose. In my town, it takes a year and $10,000 in legal fees to foreclose. I'm not going to do that. That's going to kill me. So I sell the beneficial interest in the trust on an installment contract, which is personal property. So if they default, I repossess, I don't foreclose. I can do that in 30 days on my own. Yes, sir.
So if I own properties in my trust and then I don't own them, does that make my net worth go down? If I'm investing and I'm, say, an accredited investor because I have $1 million in assets and now I don't anymore because the trust owns it, how does that work?
Well, because you are the man behind the curtain, they consider you that equity is yours because it is. I mean, you have control over it. You see, there's a big difference between ownership and control. You want to control everything. You don't want to own anything. And you still get the same benefits. You get tax benefits, the cash flow, the principal reduction. It all flows to you one way or another. Without that exposure of being on the title. Yes, sir.
And how about for loans? Like if I want to get a loan now, they're looking at all my assets and say, oh, you know, you have all these properties. Are they still going to look at it and say, well, okay, you're the beneficiary. Am I telling the bank that?
Yeah, good, really good question. One of the things you get as my student is my financial statement, an electronic version. It'll do all the calculations, but more important than that is it shows you how to show your assets on a financial statement when they're all in trust. Because let's say you want to buy some real estate and you're going shopping and you go to 5 different banks and they want your financial statement. Well, I'm not going to give 5 banks all that personal information. I'll just give them a financial statement that I want to give them. And I might take out the word all in those financial statements. It says this is a listing of all my assets. I take all out. If I'm applying for a $50,000 loan, I'm not going to show you a $10 million net worth. That's insane. So I show them what I want, and then once maybe one of those 5 banks says, yes, I'll make that loan, they'll want a breakdown of assets, and I'll give it to them. But at least I haven't given it to all the banks. So that's a financial statement that you get as my student. Okay, any last questions? Because we got about 2 minutes left before we need to move on. In the very back, and then we'll do you, sir.
So instead of foreclosing, like you said, you can just get rid of them in 30 days?
Yeah, I repossess. I have my attorney serve as my escrow agent on these deals. He holds all the documents. It's kind of like if you go to a bank and finance your truck, they hold the title, don't they? What happens if you don't make payments? They repossess the truck. And I repossess the beneficial interest because it's personal property, just like a truck. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was about to ask that question. When you say repossess, so did you take a sheriff over there and move his stuff inside?
No, my attorney's got everything. He's got all the original documents, which is fair to the buyer because I might die or go crazy or something, you know? So my attorney's got all the original documents. If the buyer pays off that contract, he gets the assignment of beneficial interest. If he defaults, he doesn't.
Yeah, but I'm saying how do you get him out? So do you go?
Oh, how do I get him out if they refuse to move? Yeah. I evict them on a month-to-month tenancy. You don't have to have a written lease on a month-to-month tenancy, and if they refuse to move, I would evict them as month-to-month tenants.
Would that work in California?
I'm not sure anything works in California, you know.
Just wondering.
Yeah. I'm the trustee on a large apartment building in California, and the owner was telling me the other day he evicted somebody, and the judge made him write the tenant who he was evicting a check for $12,000 moving expenses. You got to be kidding me. How do you make money in California doing that? I don't understand. Okay, so I'm going to be speaking at 4 o'clock this afternoon. I invite all of you to be there. I'd love to see your faces. We'll have time for a few more questions, but I want to give my full presentation. Hopefully that will answer most of your questions. And then we'll all become students, and we'll all love each other.
I want to say thank you. It's great information.
Well, if there was ever a time to clap, it'd probably be now. Right?